Susan, Butcher Box to the rescue. The other night we had some friends over for dinner and we had no idea what to make. And I was like, guess what? We have a freezer full of meat. So my husband went down and thawed out some chicken from Butcher Box and made the best coq au vin that we've had in a long, long time.
Yeah, you'd have been screwed without Butcher Box because I know you ain't got no time to go to the store right now.
That's true. I don't have time to go shop for meat or pick out the meat or find the best quality, low-priced meat. So ButcherBox does all of that for me.
So, true story, my husband's workplace has a Slack channel called Smoked Meats. And I know you can't like win a workplace conversation, but he is now because with Butcher Box, his great cuts of meat to the door, they can cook up and take photos of for his workmates.
I love ButcherBox, and I think other people would too.
ButcherBox is the ultimate convenience, delivered right to your doorstep, free shipping always, with curated, customized box plans.
It's 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, pork, raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood.
There are a variety of high-quality cuts at an amazing value with exclusive membership deals. They also provide recipe inspiration, guides, tips, and hacks.
Sign up at butcherbox.com/proof and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional 20% off.
Choose salmon, chicken breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/proof and use code PROOF to choose your free for a year offer. Plus, get $20 off your first order. If you're listening to this show, then I'm going to guess you're a fan of true crime podcasts. So in the mornings, grab your favorite mug and pour yourself a dose of spine-tingling true crime every AM with Morning Cup of Murder. It's a short daily show that's the perfect podcast to incorporate into your morning routine. In less than 15 minutes, you'll hear about a true crime that took place on today's date in history. Each day's dark history lesson will kickstart your morning with intriguing tales of murder, abduction, serial killers, cults, and more.
So, pour yourself a piping hot cup of murder every single morning with Morning Cup of Murder. Find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to this week's Sidebar. We're here to discuss episode 10 of season 2 of Proof. I'm here with Jacinda and Kevin. Hey guys.
Hey, Susan.
Hey, Susan.
And we're about to head off to New Orleans for the Innocence Conference.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. We'll get to see Lee and Josh and Jeff Titus and Joey and
Do you want to tell people what's happening at the Innocence Conference?
what's happening in the Innocence
That
Conference.
proof is being given.
Oh,
yeah. We are the recipients of the Jim Dwyer Award for Journalism for season one of Proof. So we're honored to get that award and go down there to accept it.
Looking forward to New Orleans. And but for this week's episode, we have a lot going on, episode 10, and we finally heard from the mother of Jake's friend Lewis and found out that the person she has suspected for quite a long time now is the man that Lewis calls his brother.
Yeah, Tim Fisher is who she has suspected for a long time. And I think, Susan, you mentioned in the episode about it's funny to hear us talk about it now, but we didn't go into that interview knowing what to expect. And when we came out of it, we were like, huh? Like, we didn't know what to believe or what to think, or we just knew now it was something we had to reconsider.
Yeah. This is something that happens not infrequently in investigations. There have been a lot of times I've talked to people or had people come to me and say, I'm really suspicious of so and so. And usually it never makes it onto the show. Almost never, in fact, because I mean, people have suspicions. That's not uncommon. And most times it means nothing.
I think we felt like maybe it was a little more than just suspicion because his name was in the police file from back then. So we knew that it was a name that was on the radar of Manteca Police Department. And we didn't know why it didn't go beyond just a mention in the case file.
All we know is that numerous subjects were contacted, including Tim Fisher, is what the report says. So someone contacted Tim Fisher somehow, some way, back in 2000, talked to him, and moved on.
Yeah, I mean, and it had been sort of bothering Victoria for a while. From having met her, it was clear that she's hoping that somebody will listen to her fears. Been on her mind for quite a while.
But as you heard in the show, when Jacinda and I first heard the story, I think in my head it was something we had probably like put off for a bit, get around to eventually.
Yeah, we thought it was something it'd be like a couple phone calls or a couple meetings and we could cross it out. It wasn't a priority, but it was on the list.
As the sort of arc of the season, as the story builds, we're getting into stuff now where there are lots of different avenues that the two of you are pursuing. And I feel like when you two are out there, I mean, I was on some of these trips and some I wasn't, but every time you would knock on a door, there'd be a new phone call coming in, or you would call me and there was somebody else that you were looking at.
Yeah, a lot of it, and Manteca, as we know from the initial investigation, there's a lot of rumors and a lot of hearsay and rumors and hearsay. And I heard this person say this. That's not evidence.
Yeah.
Unless, of course, in the police file, and then you have to look into it, like Mr. Rapster Delight.
Here we go again.
I'm just telling you, like, okay, the fact Susan and Wells were super into Mr. Rapster or Rapper Delight. They call him both names. And I'm not sure if they were just intrigued like I am now or if they knew something more, but they literally asked every friend of Jake's they talked to, like, so who was Rapster Delight? And they're all like, huh?
Maybe we should take out a billboard in Manteca,
Yeah. Look, he probably does not exist. I feel like that is probably what the reality is. However, in the tips coming into the police, Rapper's Delight is a guy named Richard who is Renee's ex-boyfriend. And we do know, we think we know, that Renee really did have an ex called Richard. Like that part seems true. Whether he was called Rapper's Delight or not, jury's still out. But it's a two-part mystery here, and the Richard part seems legit, and we don't know who that guy is.
And nobody else knows who that is. Like Renee's friends don't remember her dating someone named Rich or Richard and
But they didn't know
Jake.
a lot of the guys she dated.
Right. But I mean, there's no, like, we don't know where else to turn. Jake doesn't remember. We
Yeah.
can't find him. Someone out there
Jake
knows.
knew. Jake literally knew in the interview tapes, like in his interrogations. Susan Wells kept asking about him. And one of them, Jake is like, oh, yeah, I saw Richard driving down the road, like in his Chevy. And then I'll ask more. I'm like, can you please ask more questions right now? Like, it's being recorded. Please ask him. And they don't. And the
And
only, so here, so they ask Jake about Richard. And the only details Jake gives is like, he was short and ugly, which I'm like, that could be true or it could be Jake being jealous. I don't know which it is.
now he has no memory of it, of
Yeah.
Rich at all.
And of course, we don't know how he's linked to Tim Fisher, which is what the tips coming in the police were saying, is that somehow this is all connected back to Tim Fisher. So whatever those rumors were about, whatever those stories were about, whether it's true or not, what we do know is true is that those stories somehow got turned into a question given to Josh Burroughs and then became the genesis of the Home Depot party. Because the story the police and the prosecutor go with is that Richard Ornelas, aka Rapper Delight, was the one who told Josh Burroughs, hey, Renee's pregnant. We're having a party to celebrate at the Home Depot. Come with me, bro.
Yeah, but just to remind everyone, we're 100% sure Richard Ornelas is not Rapper's Delight.
We've talked to people who knew him back then. He did not want to talk to us for the show. His friends that we talked to said it was traumatizing for him. He got interviewed at least twice. What I'm still amazed by is that he convinced them that he was not involved. And they let him go and like walked away from it. But that was not a guaranteed outcome.
Yeah, I mean, some of these kids could be sitting exactly where Jake is now if things had gone just a little bit different. And not because they're guilty, but just because of the way things played out.
Yep. Fuji, Richard, those two especially, and Ray, obviously.
Yeah, and we've mentioned Robbie before, but him too. And pretty much any person mentioned being at the party ran that risk.
Well, there was no party.
Well, that didn't stop anything. So, this episode, we also heard about what we've learned about Jared Conway so far. And he was not someone in the case files. We learned about him from that anonymous comment online. So, we're starting from scratch with him. And again, this was one of those leads where, like, we've got to look into it, but probably going nowhere. Let's scratch it out.
Yeah, like how convenient. Serial rapist. It's almost too good to be true in a way. And we want to check him off again so we could cross him off the list. And
Well, we also thought he didn't exist. Like, it sounded like a fake comment, right? Like, that was my thought. Like, what the hell is this bullshit someone's writing online? So the first time I saw that comment, I was like, oh, he's not real. Well, he is real. And oh yeah, he did live right near Renee and right near where she worked. And the way Manteca is laid out, this car wash is sort of at a crossroads for Renee. Like, she would have been by there all the time.
yeah, it was close to the McDonald's where she worked.
Wasn't close to it, it was next to it. I mean,
Yeah, like whether he was involved or not, like it is actually probably true that these two people, the serial rapist and Renee, crossed paths at some point. Doesn't at all mean he was involved, but like just from
just
the
proximity.
yeah, like they probably definitely would have been in the same space at some point, because it's hard to see how they wouldn't have been.
And so we were able to find out who he was and to pull some records. And I remember when we were first reading those records, we both were like, oh my gosh, it's.
You all started filling me in on the Jared Conway situation. One of the first thoughts that I had was the Jeff Titus case. And you've got this crime that happens, and it's the same MO as a serial killer who's killing hunters that way. And oh, by the way, there's somebody who puts him at the location.
At this point, all we know is that Jared Conway lived in the same area as Renee did, and that someone out there in the world thinks he killed her for reasons that we don't know because he didn't explain fully in his comment. So, interesting, yes, not too much to go on, but like just enough, you're like, okay, well, let's keep exploring.
Susan, do you remember we found the records and found out that he had put his victim in the trunk of the car and driven her somewhere, removed her from one car, put her in another car, and kept her in the trunk for a while. And then we went to actually see the Home Depot ourselves. And when we saw the opening and how big those openings are, especially, back then when it was still under construction, and how easy it would have been for someone to drive in, that kind of hit hard and it made us think of him. And it made us realize it's not a story we can just like discredit. We have to dig more. We have to keep looking into it.
It was also one of our first trips out there, and we had a partial file for the photos at that point. So we hadn't seen some of the images the police did take that were in the trial file of those big openings, the Home Depot. So like logically, that would be there, but like walking into it and seeing it in person, it just kind of hit us both that like someone drove her in there. Like, she didn't walk across a giant empty dirt field barefoot. That did not happen.
Yeah, it was secluded. I mean, in the episode, you guys are walking around in the middle of the day, as evidenced by being asked for help twice while you're there. Most of us can't get anyone to ask us if we need help, but you two seemed like big spenders. Yeah, can you guys get me a deal on a kitchen? But yeah, I mean, it's this at the time, it's this secluded, incomplete building. It's dark in the middle of nowhere, and somebody can drive their car in and nobody can see what's going on in there.
So to explain a bit more, the big opening, the one you drive into, it's like the easily accessible one to a car. It's in the back of the building. So Yosemite is like the main thoroughfare. It's in the front to the north. And there's traffic there all the time. It's busy. Behind the Home Depot to the south, there's nothing. At this time, it's literally just like dirt fields and like almost a mile away, another warehouse. Like it's empty, empty, empty. Once someone's behind the Home Depot, they could have driven in there and no one would ever have seen it. Like, yeah, driving to the Home Depot, a car probably would have been visible. But once you're in the back, yeah, no one's going to see you.
The picture on the Instagram site is of the door, correct? Yeah.
As you heard in the show, we wrote to Jared Conway, who has the benefit of being the easiest person in this whole case to find. And we did hear back from him, which we'll hear more about in coming episodes.
Hey everyone, before we continue with this episode, I want to tell you about another podcast. Have you ever wondered what it feels like to watch your house burn down or be attacked by an alligator or learn that your spouse hired someone to kill you? If you're dying to know, then What Was That Like is the podcast for you. What Was That Like is filled with real stories about the most surreal experiences of people's lives.
On the show, host Scott Johnson dives deep with his guests into the unbelievable situations they found themselves in, like animal attacks, plane crashes, winning The Price is Right, and more. The show brings you tons of completely surreal, completely true stories, all told through the lens of the person who actually experienced it.
Check out some of these episodes about wild and gripping stories to gain some insight on what it was like to, say, be a professional bridesmaid or lose a leg in a shark attack.
Susan, I think you'd be a really good professional bridesmaid.
And you'd be really good at losing a leg in a shark attack.
Oh, gee, thanks.
So if you want to hear some disturbing, inspiring firsthand stories, you need to check out What Was That Like? Every story is thoroughly researched and fact-checked, so you know even the most bizarre tales are someone's reality. Listen to What Was That Like on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you want to know what it's like to hang out with MS-13 in El Salvador? How the Russian mafia fought battles all over Brooklyn in the 1990s.
Or what about that time I got lost in the Burmese jungle hunting the world's biggest meth lab? Or why the Japanese Yakuza have all those crazy dragon tattoos? I'm Sean Williams.
And I'm Danny Gold. And we're the host of the Underworld Podcast. We're journalists that have traveled all over, reporting on dangerous people and places. And every week, we'll be bringing you a new story about organized crime from all over the world.
We know this stuff because we've been there. We've seen it. And we've got the near misses and embarrassing tales to go with it. We'll mix in reporting with our own experiences in the field, and we'll throw in some bad jokes while we're at it.
The Underworld Podcast explores the criminal underworlds that affect all of our lives, whether we know it or not. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
You also heard in episode 10 that we spoke to one of the informants that testified against Ty. We felt like it was important to talk to him, because if you take Josh Burrows out of the equation, really the only thing left
is the informants.
And Susan, you were able to track down one of the informants who testified.
And it turned out that Mike was not only an informant for Ty Lopes. In fact, there were three different murder defendants that allegedly confessed to him during his fairly brief stay at the San Joaquin County Jail. But only one of them, Ty, went to trial. So the others, he gave a statement for, they pled out, end of everything. Ty was the one he had to testify about, and Ty was the one that's been haunting him for quite a while. Although I suspect it was not haunting him because of Ty himself, but because of Jake.
Right. It seemed like he says he never thought Jake was involved. He thought Jake was just a scared kid. He kind of had empathy for Jake, sympathy, and he didn't remember saying anything that might implicate Jake.
I didn't know he even knew Jake. So when I talked to Jake and told him about it, I didn't expect Jake to remember anything really, because that's like, you know, brief encounters are not usually what sticks in his mind. And I asked him, he's like, oh yeah, I totally knew that guy. We were totally in jail together.
What did he say? He was cool.
He told me, I'm like, Jake, you know that guy, like, told a story about you raping and killing Renee, right? He's like, oh, that was him. Oh, but like, yeah, no, from what I can tell, I mean, I know Jake liked Mike. They got along. They apparently talked. And both of them seem to like have, I don't want to say a bond, but like they both remember that time fondly. Like they got along well in jail.
Yeah, I mean, Jake, he helped Jake get through. Imagine being 18, you're on trial for rape and murdering your girlfriend. You're in solitary.
Yeah.
Like, that's got to be terrifying. And this guy was, you know, nice to him.
Yeah. So what happened was they had three co-defendants for a high-profile murder case, and the jail can't keep them together. So what happened is they put, like, them in three separate areas. Like, you know, they have the standard jail area. They have, like, where Ty was. Then you have the hole. Like, that's the only place you can put Jake where he can't be around Ray or Ty. And because the trials were drawn out for so long, it was nearly 2 years before Jake got out. Eventually, Ty was convicted, sent to prison, and they moved Jake out and put him on PCR. But for like the 22, 23 months before that, yeah, Jake was literally in solitary for almost 2 years. And everyone thinks he's like a rapist murderer. They're horrible to him. There are only a few handful of people who are nice to him in that whole time, and they stand out so clear in his mind because of that.
Yeah, and he's oblivious to what's going on behind the scenes with it.
Yes.
The Mike thing in this episode, when it happened, because I was on that trip, stood out to me sort of from a human perspective, just how heartbreaking it was that this man testify. This man came forward and said these things because of his own situation of desperation. He's making this trade, his life for ties.
Look, it's a dirty ass game they are all playing.
Yeah.
And
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he chose to lie in exchange for going home to his family. And but that's the deal he made. And he lost the deal in the end because he had to testify. So he did not win that deal.
And you can tell that he struggles to live with that. I mean, one of the things I was taken by is I was with you all at the Chili's that night. I wasn't at the table because didn't want to.
Yeah, I told him when I first talked to him, like, hey, Justin and I will be there. We want to spook him with more people showing up. So Kevin got to sit in the car.
No, I didn't sit in the car. I had a nice dinner with Anthony. And as I recall, Anthony and I made fun of the two of you for about an hour or so.
Yeah, it sounds
well,
great.
That's right. Y'all snuck into the Chili's without us. Forgot about that part.
Well, we didn't sneak in. It's a public restaurant and there weren't a ton of choices. So we,
So Jacinda and I meet with the witness, with the informant, Mike. Yeah. And he wanted to go to Chili's. It's public. He likes Chili's. Great. Yeah. We're there. So Kevin and our cameraman, Anthony, are there with us. So while we're having our discussion with Mike about intense subjects, Anthony and Kevin are two rows away, having a normal night out at Chili's.
I think the game was on,
The thing was that Mike, when I called Mike, he could have hung up. It would have been easier for him and better for him to hang up. And he did not, because this has bothered him for a very long time. And it was so apparent in our conversation. He was extremely emotional. He was crying for much of it.
He was crying at dinner. I mean, Susan's ordering her martini and this guy's bawling his eyes out.
It was very apparent when you came back and we all got in the car to drive back to the hotel, and that it had been a very powerful conversation, that he had a lot of regret and he was living with a lot of demons over that. And he struggled with it. And, if you have a moral compass, and it's clear that Mike does, you might not necessarily always make the right decision, but you're going to struggle with the decision you make for the rest of your life.
And I know Jacinda and I disagreed a bit about how much agency he had here and how much freedom he had to choose a route. I think it's complicated by the fact that once Mike started down this route, once you're an informant for one defendant, they ask you to do another, then they ask you to do another. I mean, yeah, end of the day, he was the one who could say yes or no.
And when I say right decision, maybe that's the incorrect term, because I'm not sitting in his chair. And I think we would all like to have the belief that we would say, there's no way I'm testifying about this. No way I'm telling, when you have a wife and kids at home and somebody offers you a get out of jail free card, I mean, what are you going to do? Right. And the unfortunate thing is that has ramifications for everyone, including Mike. Mm-hmm.
So here's my take. This is not what Mike said. This is not something that he expressed, but from talking to him, the picture I walked away with is that the line he drew, the decisions he made, was that he would talk about who he was asked to talk about if he believed they were guilty. And if he did not think they were guilty, he was able to and did say
right,
no.
Which is why he ultimately did not testify against Jake, but was okay with testifying against Ty.
That's the thing. He protected Jake. The report makes it so clear from Susan Wells when they talk about their first meeting with him. They ask so you're in jail with Jake too. What's he tell you? And the response they record from Mike is he says, oh, I rarely ever talk to that guy.
The thing that comes down to, though, is, he's talking about whether people he thinks are guilty or not. Seems like it just comes down to people, whether he likes them.
Yep.
Because he doesn't really know if the person is guilty or not. And
I think he also got to actually know Jake. I think he and Jake had real conversations, real talks. They knew each other. Mike never liked Ty. Ty would talk at him. They weren't really talking to each
other. Right, so it becomes less of a traumatic thing or less of a thing to conceive of the idea that Ty might have in fact done it than it does with Jake, because you get to know him as a person, and it becomes less of a situation.
Susan, but, what do you think if, looking at the trial transcript and the evidence presented, if they didn't have Mike, do you think Ty would have been convicted?
If they didn't have Mike or Bill, the other informant, I think no. that could be me deluding myself because I want to believe that a jury wouldn't do that. They wouldn't convict someone on just this crazy ass kid's lies. They might have, but I think even a jury that wants to convict, if they have a defense attorney who is doing an okay job, they're going to want more than just Josh Burrows. And also, we know for a fact that the jury, before they convicted Ty, they asked to rehear the testimony of Bill and Mike and then convicted him. So yeah, I think it's pretty definitive in that respect that something about it swayed their opinion. Now, so like, here's the thing. Both Bill and Mike have the story of like Ty confessing to them, but the stories don't match. Like, the stories are way like far apart. Bill's story has lots of names. He talks about like Robbie and Ray and how Renee has a bladder infection. That's why she didn't want to have group sex. And then you have Mike's story, which is actually probably the more restrained one, where the villain's actually Jake. Like, Jake is the one raping Renee. And according to Mike, Ty was holding her down, thinking it was all like consensual until he realized it wasn't. I mean, the stories are a mess. Like, nothing about them really adds up when you think too hard about it. But the idea that Ty is sitting there like bragging about killing Renee, I guess, resonated with the jury. I don't know.
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, reading the transcripts, you know they're not being told what to say. You know the informants have not been instructed, say this, because they would have made better statements. They're just too off the wall to have been planned and organized, which is confusing until we talked to Mike and understood how this came about. What Mike told us, again, we have not talked to the attorneys involved, not talked to the detectives involved, but I believe him. Mike says that he was brought up to the fifth floor to talk about the case. Case file's there. All the white men and Susan Ty step out, leave him there with the file. And no one told him to read the file. No one told him to go through it. I think anyone in his place would understand that he's supposed to go through it. And he did.
Yeah. And he told us it didn't really help because he couldn't read. So
yeah. That's why he couldn't name names. That's why he didn't know like any details. And I imagine the detectives coming back, like saying like, okay, so what did Ty tell you? And I'm sure they were wondering too, why this guy didn't have a better story.
Yeah, they're probably getting frustrated.
Like, dude, did you not know what we're trying to do here?
But it's just a sad story all around. Like, here's this guy, Mike, who's trying to save his life at the expense of someone else's, literally, because Ty ends up murdered. It's sad for everybody.
Look, in his head, maybe he'd give the prosecutor a little extra leverage, but he wouldn't change the outcome. And we told him, like, he asked us, he's like, did my statement matter? We told him, yes, it did. And I think that's when he started crying, actually.
Yep. He's going to have to live with it forever. And it is something I think he's been wanting to talk about and get off his chest. And I don't know if he felt any better after talking to us. I mean, at least he got the truth out there. And I think that's what he was wanting to do.
On some level, I mean, you know, I know enough now that a witness recanting their statement doesn't really mean a whole lot. But on some level, it's almost unfortunate that he didn't testify against Jake.
Yeah, I had that thought too. I'm like, you know what? If you had testified against Jake, he might be better off now.
But at least there'd be somebody coming forward saying to the court, I was lying.
So on Monday, there's episode 11, where Jacinda and I leave Manteca temporarily to find a witness who is no longer there.
Yeah, we take a flight to the Midwest to look for Ray Gomes.
Is this the infamous stakeout?
Yes.
Great.
Don't believe the lies you hear next episode. Jacinda and I are great detectives.
Yeah, let them be the judge of that, Susan.
So, that's next week on Proof.
You've been listening to Proof Sidebar, a podcast by Red Marble Media in association with Glass Box Media. Send us your questions and comments at proofcrimepod@gmail.com. Follow us everywhere with the handle @proofcrimepod and on our website, proofcrimepod.com. Regular episodes drop on Mondays, and you can find sidebars on Thursdays. Thanks so much for listening.